Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, January 12th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the final show here of the week. Two good guests joining me today. The first, you know him as Whale Capper on Twitter, at Whale underscore Capper. We're going to chat NFL playoffs for the divisional round this weekend, then also take a look at Friday night's NBA card. So good thing that we're getting this show out to you nice and early here on Friday so you can take a look at the games in the association, maybe follow some of Whale Capper's recommendations, or at the very least, get a better idea of how to handicap these daily NBA cards. Second part of today's show, we'll have Brent from DSI Sports with this week's version of the odds report. Sharp action all over the marketplace for the NFL playoffs, and we'll also wrap up how things went for the college football season, taking a look back at Monday's national championship game. Before we get into that, a few things I want to mention here at the top of today's broadcast. Over at bangthebook.com, tons and tons of stuff going on. I tell you about it every single day because I'm very proud of the work that we're doing over there at the website. Game previews all day long. We've got tons of situational betting articles for the NBA, NHL, college basketball. We've got trends of the day for the major daily winter sports that are going on right now. I'll have NFL playoffs for the conference NFL previews, excuse me, for the conference championship games coming up probably Sunday night, maybe Monday morning. We cover golf. We cover NASCAR when that rolls around with the Daytona 500 about a little over a month or so from now. We cover UFC over there at the website as well. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. We're going to have some new NBA pick features as well. Can't talk today. I guess I'm excited about the weekend here. But in any event, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information over at bangthebook.com. And, of course, if you missed any of the shows here this week, make sure that you catch up some good shelf life on those programs. We'll be doing the daily show through the end of the month of March here. Then once we get into April, I'll do a couple editions of the Bettors Box each week. Maybe we'll do a Tuesday takeover. I also intend to bring back the Monday mailbag at that point. Well, actually, the Monday mailbag will probably come back the Monday after the Super Bowl. So start thinking of those questions that you want to hear answered here on Bang the Book Radio. Also over at bangthebook.com, get involved with those free contests that we have going on. Daily Streaker, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, monthly pick of the day. Cash prizes available for those. Free to sign up. Just give us an email address. We'll shoot you a newsletter every now and then, and that's all that you'll have to worry about with that. Also, check out our sportsbook reviews. You know about that BTB25 promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. $25 free bet for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. Good opportunity for you to get an account going over there. If you already have one, or maybe you want to try out somewhere else, check out the sportsbook reviews that we have over at Bang the Book Radio as well. Those will be a tremendous resource for you. Well, we'll fire things up here with our first guest. That is Whale Capper, at Whale underscore Capper on Twitter. Very, very sharp guy. Has a terrific podcast of his own, which we'll talk about at the end of the segment here. But we're looking at the NFL playoffs and the NBA for Friday night. So without further ado, here is that segment with Whale Capper. All righty, I'm joined now by Whale Capper, at Whale underscore Capper on Twitter. We're going to talk some NFL playoffs and some NBA action for Friday night with some stuff that will be relevant beyond Friday as well. Capper, how's it going today, sir?
It's going phenomenally, Adam. Thanks again for having me back. I had a great time with you last time and looking forward to what should be maybe the best weekend of the year in the NFL.
Yeah, it should be a good one. I appreciate you taking some time here. Should I refer to you as Mr. Whale or Mr. Capper? I'm not quite sure.
Whale works. Whale Capper works. Mr. Capper is fine. It's no whale is a good colloquial.
All right, that'll work. So I'll just refer to you as Whale, even though being a whale is not really a good thing when it comes to gambling vernacular. So, I feel bad. I feel like I'm insulting your abilities there.
Oh, no worries, man. It's actually a nickname from college. I was a swimmer back in the day, and I caught the name the nickname White Whale because I used to wear a drag suit and have a white butt hanging out all the time, and so people used to call me the White Whale.
Well, there you go. Not the whale tail that I'm familiar with, but we'll go ahead.
No, not the good kind. No.
All right. We'll go ahead and leave it at that. All right, so let's chat about the NFL here, and this is a divisional round for the playoffs, four games, highly scrutinized matchups. We've talked about them a lot here on the show throughout the week, and obviously all the talking heads out there in the media throwing out their opinions as well. So Let's get yours here, and I think it's going to be much, much sharper than the ones that I'm referring to. We'll start with Atlanta and Philadelphia here, game 301, 302. And, you know, again, the most amazing thing about this game, the fact that the number one seed Philadelphia, a home dog in its first playoff game, first time that's ever happened with the current seeding format, is it justified? Do you feel like that's where this line should be?
I think they set it in a way that they're going to get fairly even betting here. Given that this is the first game of four, I don't think they really wanted to, you know, bookmakers, that is, if I was in their shoes, I wouldn't want to necessarily take a lopsided action on the first game of the four. And so I think this was a strategic line. And they're probably, they're probably going to take a good amount of, you know, there was probably a good amount of Philadelphia future money out there from earlier in the season when Wentz looked like the MVP. And it looked like Philadelphia was going to lock up home field and waltz to the Super Bowl. So they probably had a lot of flexibility in terms of setting this line. I think, you know, opening it at -2.5 was pretty interesting and strategic. And we see it now sitting at three with a lot of the public support on Atlanta. That makes sense to me. Atlanta looked like they could beat any team in the NFL last weekend when they were out in LA. Their defense is playing, you know, up to a championship level. I would say, everyone who bet the playoffs last year remembers the run they went on in the NFC playoffs, and, you know, came oh so close to winning the Super Bowl. So, you know, this looks like a pretty fair line, and I've gone back and forth on this about 10 times, and I don't think there's an obvious side here on the Atlanta -3 at least. But I do like an angle on the total. Where are you on this one?
You know, this one's tricky for me because, I mean, I like Atlanta at the outset. And in the preview I wrote over at bangthebook.com, I talked about taking Atlanta because I need Nick Foles to prove it to me. I would rather pay to back Atlanta than run the risk of Nick Foles doing something that just doesn't work out for a Philadelphia ticket, or if Nick Foles has to do too much in this game. But that's the concern, is I think there's kind of a little bit of a variance element to this game in that, you know, Atlanta looked really good last week, but Atlanta, you know, they've moved the football all year long. They played pretty well on defense, and yet it seemed like a lot of games were a struggle for them because they didn't capitalize on a lot of their red zone opportunities. And when you see the total coming down, the expectation of a low scoring game makes it hard for me to really love Atlanta because, you know, if they're not going to get seven, if they're going to settle for three, you leave the door open for Nick Foles and this Philadelphia team that has a lot of skill position talent. So I don't feel like I've got a really strong opinion on the side. Where are you looking to go with the total?
I think the under is a solid play on this one. I actually I saw them open it at 44 and got real interested real quickly and blinked, and it's down to 41. I think we've seen Atlanta transition as a team overall, from the team we saw last year, which just had unstoppable offense. Kyle Shanahan was in the zone play calling and scheming brilliantly to get his guys wide open. Matt Ryan was the clear MVP last year. All of their offensive systems have regressed across the board with having lost Shanahan. So, and you brought up a great point. Like, they are not putting up points. They are settling for field goals when they should be scoring touchdowns. Even last week against the Rams, I mean, that, you know, it was clearly – it was a clear Falcons win, Falcons cover, but it felt like that could have gone, you know, that could have been a complete blowout. If it wasn't for the Rams defense holding them to field goals, that game would have been out of hand by the end of the, you know, by halftime or the end of the third quarter. I am a little concerned being on the under that Atlanta could finally put it together in the red zone and finally hit their stride on offense and take this over the total. But when I, you know, if I had to single out a unit in this game that I think is going to be the difference maker, it's probably the Atlanta defense. I thought their tackling was phenomenal against the Rams. They kept everyone in front of them. They made every single tackle that was asked of them. And I, you know, that's not the kind of thing that you see one week and they go out the next week and they forget how to tackle. These guys are playing, they're healthy. They're playing extremely tough defense. I think about, you know, what keeps me from backing Philadelphia as a home dog here is I don't know if they're getting over 10 points, to be honest. You know, we saw how hard it was for them to score in their finale against the Cowboys. And granted, you know, there was nothing really at stake in that game. But they had a tough time scoring against the Raiders on that primetime game. The last it was the night game on Christmas Day. The Raiders defense is atrocious, and Philadelphia couldn't even really put it together to make their team anywhere near their team total in that game. And so, you know, I don't think Foles, you know, they've had a week now to scheme, a week now to plan for Foles being the quarterback. I still don't see them scoring enough points to get this close to the over. And I would guess that in the locker room, the Philly defense knows that. The Philly defense probably looks at this game like it's on us to get the win here. We must stop Atlanta. We must turn them over. We must, you know, control the game, and the coaches are probably thinking field position battle and things like that. And the Philly defense has some playmakers. I think they can do that. And at the end of the day here, I do think Atlanta wins and likely covers the 3, but under 41 is probably my favorite angle on this one.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting. You look at Atlanta, top team in the league on third down, 44.7%. Philadelphia, third best team on third down defense, 32.2%. So, you know, you got strength versus strength there, and you know that'll probably wind up dictating what happens with this game. If Atlanta converts those third downs, stays on the field, you know, puts themselves in position to kick field goals because we know they're not going to score touchdowns, then you know, they should put themselves in a position for success. But man, I gotta say, you know, when you look at the red zone lack of success for the Falcons, when you've got a two back system with Freeman and Coleman, when you've got a 6'4" dude like Mohamed Sanu and an absolute freak like Julio Jones, how the hell do you go 50% in the red zone? That's a massive failure from Steve Sarkisian. And, you know, I mean, I guess they kind of rolled the dice with that hire to begin with. But, you know, I mean, considering that Atlanta's here in spite of that, you know, that is a testament to how good their defense has played. And I think that's why you're definitely onto something with the under.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the other kind of angle that helps the under is it looks like there's probably going to be pretty decent wind in Philly, looking at like maybe 12 to 15 mile an hour winds, with the winds getting worse as the game goes on here. Not expecting precipitation or particular cold weather, I don't think you're going to see a lot of home run throws from either side. You know, Atlanta's got that kicker that, you know, Bryant is making 50-yard field goals look easy. If you're going to take a side, I think you have to factor that in. Like, he's going to make the kick that takes them to the NFC Championship game, I believe.
All right, so let's talk about this game here between Tennessee and New England. New England, pretty much a 13.5-point favorite. We're recording this here on Thursday evening. I don't think this number moves too much by Friday morning. And quite frankly, I'm not really sure where this number has the chance to move by kickoff, because – the books already know they're getting public money on New England. They're still not on 14. Tennessee may get some sharp involvement just because it's a playoff game with a double-digit line, and they can run the football a little bit. So, Whale, how are you seeing this one?
First of all, just as a declaration, I grew up in Massachusetts, so I do have a little bit of Patriot Homer in me. As I look at this Patriots team, I'm very concerned about how this defense is going to stack up against the Tennessee offense, even though the Tennessee offense does not really inspire a whole lot of confidence as a unit, and they don't have a particular – they kind of lucked into what is their best look, which is Mariota in the shotgun. The second half of that game against Kansas City, they really had no choice but to go to Mariota in the shotgun, and as – the people who have been following the Titans for the last several weeks have identified that is his best opportunity for success. I'm very hopeful that they have kind of learned their lesson and they start out with Mariota in the shotgun here, or at least go to it early enough in the game to keep this competitive. You know, Derrick Henry is a nightmare matchup as far as a tackling standpoint goes, and New England's giving up just crazy amounts of yardage. I know that they're completely out of whack in terms of how much their defense is giving up yardage wise compared to how many points they're conceding. And I know Tennessee definitely has their own red zone issues, to kind of piggyback on what we were talking about with Atlanta. But at the same time, that's a lot of points to cover. I think you're going to see a pretty competitive game here. I can make the case that New England has a particularly difficult time handling mobile quarterbacks throughout the, you know, the last several years, the Matt Patricia regime, I guess. And so I'm probably going to grab the points there. It's not going to be a huge, you know, it's not going to be a huge position for me. The angle that I think makes the most sense again here is a total. I grabbed over 47 earlier this week, and I couldn't be happier sitting on that number. Like I mentioned, I think the Titans are going to be able to find their points throughout the day, and we could see an all-time performance from the Patriots on offense here, you know, given all the drama that's been going on the last week or so, and really, I guess, the last half of the season. There's been some internal palace intrigue. You could see, you know, 30 something points from the Patriots. And, if we can get 20 from the, Titans, then the, Titans cover and the over makes it home. And that's what I'll be looking for on Saturday night.
I think that makes a lot of sense too, especially because, you know, a lot of times people would expect with a big spread like this, the game's going to get out of hand and the favorite's going to get conservative and kind of, you know, just run the football and try to go ahead into next week and look ahead to facing either Jacksonville or Pittsburgh. That's not how Bill Belichick and Tom Brady operate. They will keep throwing the football. They don't care. They have no moral compass about embarrassing pretty much anybody. So that is something that is pretty nice here about this game as well, in that maybe the New England defense relaxes if they get a big lead. The offense won't. The offense is going to keep going. So, you know, I think that it's almost – I don't want to say it's counterintuitive to what we usually see with a big spread, but I think this is a game where, you know, in the second half, I think both teams kind of keep going, especially from a Tennessee standpoint where, you know, obviously there's a lot of pride on this team. To be able to do what they've done, you lose that heartbreaker to San Francisco, you lose that close game at home to the Rams, you still find a way to get into the playoffs. The team's battled for 5 or 6 weeks and has gotten up off the deck every time they've been asked to do so. You know, now they're coming in off of a little bit of an emotional high. Even if they get down 17 points or something at halftime, I don't think this team quits. So, you know, especially because last week they erased an 18-point deficit. So I think they do play a full 60 minutes here, whereas some teams, if they're getting blown out, you know, may not have that same mindset.
Those are great points. The other angles that I like on this one, or at least the other supporting factors, if you look kind of, I mean, this kind of blew my mind when I looked this up, because I was like, man, it feels like the Patriots get a bye every freaking year, right? And this, believe it or not, this is Belichick and Brady's 12th game in the divisional round at home off a bye. And
wow.
That in and of itself is unbelievable. But over those 12 games, this is their 12th game. So over the 11 that we've seen, they're 10-1 straight up. Their only loss coming to the Jets in the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez nightmare game where they lost 28-24. Against the spread, they're not particularly impressive over this 11-game sample. They're about 500. A lot of these games are going over. For whatever reason, their offense is clicking out of the bye. They get their healthy pieces back. Their offensive line is looking relatively intact. You know, they're going to unleash Gronk probably on Saturday. You know, this is interestingly enough, over this 11 game sample, they're 8-3 to the over. Several of these games were high totals already. So they were expecting particularly high scoring and they exceeded those expectations. The handful of games that did not make it over the total over this 11 game sample were like back in the day when the Patriots had were being carried by their defense as opposed to Tom Brady, doing most of the heavy lifting. So I think, you know, at least in terms of, if you look to history as a guide of what type of performance you're going to get out of a Belichick team, you know, one, I don't necessarily think that this Patriots defense stacks up particularly well against Patriots defenses of the past. And so they're going to have to score some points to make sure that they get the win. You know, I could see a 31-20 kind of game, something in that ballpark where they win win comfortably, but can't cover the 13.5 points, and that over ticket makes it to the window.
Now, let me ask you about this here, and then we'll move on from this game. Matt Patricia taking some head coaching interviews. Josh McDaniels, of course, has sniffed around the last couple of years as well. Does that concern you with regards to how prepared New England is for this game? Because you already think Tennessee, you know, stacks up pretty well against the Patriots defense. is the fact that Patricia will probably be taking a head coaching job somewhere. Does that factor into your handicap of the total as well?
It's an interesting angle. If this were the first time that these guys were getting looks and sniffs at head coaching jobs and they were going through interviews the first time, I would say there would be more of an angle there. I think at this point they probably were expecting this and were prepared for this. And I think they got most of their interviewing done the week that they had off, where they didn't really know who their opponent was going to be. And I mean, for all we know, they were game planning for Kansas City. So this is, I don't think that they particularly lost a step in terms of game planning. And when it comes to the Patriots, and I guess this is an important point. When it comes to the Patriots defense, they're getting it done by scheme, right? They have one of the least talented defensive rosters in the playoffs. If Kyle Van Noy is less than 100%, he's battling a calf injury, and I know he's been practicing this week, and he'll probably play. But if he's limited at all, he's kind of the linchpin to this defense. I don't know what you're going to get out of their run-stopping unit. I think it's an interesting factor. The kind of overall palace intrigue about whether Belichick is going to be around next year and who's making the football decisions between Kraft, Brady, and Belichick is interesting. But if anything, I think it'll serve to kind of bring the team together over this playoff run, and then we'll see how it plays out if and when they lose in the playoffs.
All right, so it does seem like New England should be winning on Saturday night. I mean, crazier things have happened. The U.S. beat the Soviets in 1980, for example. So we'll go to Sunday here. Jacksonville taking on Pittsburgh. This number is pretty much 7 across the market as we're looking here on Thursday evening. The 7.5s that were out there on Wednesday night, pretty much gobbled up. If you want to take one, BetOnline's got one as of Thursday night at -130, which, obviously you're paying a pretty significant amount of juice there with that one. But what do you think about this line? I mean, is 7 pretty much the right number? Do you have an opinion on the side?
This one's interesting, too, because the look-aheads last week on this one were – and this was not a mystery that we get these two teams matching up, right? I mean, not many people gave Bills a chance to win in Jacksonville, which meant the 2-3 was likely going to happen. And the look-aheads were about Pittsburgh -4.5, and they open up -7.5 or 7s at some shops. And so – clearly, there's something about the one-week performance which really, made the books feel like they could ask for more out of Pittsburgh backers. I saw it too. Blake Bortles, was shook trying to pass the football. They were a lot of people making excuses about the wind and whatnot, but didn't look particularly windy to me, and some of those passes didn't look influenced by the wind whatsoever. He was airmailing, 8-yard, dump offs. He ended up having to go to his legs to sustain drives and, to keep the field position battle in favor of the Jags, and it worked. It was not a confidence inspiring performance from Blake. That said, I do a little bit looser performance from them. When you're a 7.5-point dog on the road, and less is expected of you, you're probably, you're going to be a little looser, I suspect. It's enticing to take the Jaguars here at this number, just knowing that their defense is going to keep them in the game, because they're the best defense in the playoffs by all measures, and that there's some sharp minds that I talked to who feel pretty strongly about the Pittsburgh Steelers in this spot. And maybe that's got me a little bit less, a little bit more tentative in backing the Jaguars here, but I'm probably going to be grabbing the points in this one come Sunday morning.
I mean, maybe the timing of the look ahead line better than I do. Had Antonio Brown come out and said he was 100%, or were they still operating under the assumption that, he may not play?
I think it was an uncertainty, but, okay. At the time that he got hurt and the week after that, I don't think there really was much doubt that he was going to be back for the playoffs. So I'm not sure I think the primary factor in driving the line was people saw how bad Blake Bortles looked in his first playoff game. And you know what? That's not unique to Blake Bortles. first-time quarterbacks generally don't look particularly good in their first playoff game. We're going to get to this in a second with Case Keenum, I guess. But it's a common thing to see somebody really struggle in their first playoff spot. And Blake had the nerves on Sunday, and hopefully he's playing a little looser and can keep this a little bit more competitive this week.
And I don't want to plant my flag in a defense of Blake Bortles, but I'm going to go ahead and defend him here. You know, Leonard Fournette, ever since he got hurt in the middle of the season, he's had like 3.2 yards per carry or something like that since week 9. He's had multiple wide receivers hurt pretty much every single week. I mean, you know, they're throwing to D.D. Westbrook and what Jaden Mickens was getting a few targets a game. It's not like this guy's got, you know, a recipe for success around him either.
It's absolutely true. Leonard Fournette, I don't know what happened to him. He's averaging less than 3 yards a carry over a pretty significant sample size right now. He certainly looks like he hit the rookie wall, and or he just is not as talented as people expected. So it's going to be on Blake. And, you know, if I'm not a huge I don't have a lot of confidence in the pack, in the Steelers defense, for that matter. And this is kind of setting up where I'm probably going to go again with the total play here as my more confident of the two plays. The over is looking pretty nice at 41. Since the Steelers lost Ryan Shazier, they've had a very, very difficult time containing teams. Even with Shazier, they gave up 28 points to Brett Hundley and the Packers in primetime. They gave up 38 points to Joe Flacco and the Ravens. This is not a team that, you know, that is winning games with its defense. And if the Jags can get into the, you know, 17 or 20 point range, the over is looking mighty nice at 41.
All right. One more game to talk about here in the divisional round, game 307-308 in rotation order. New Orleans takes on Minnesota. Minnesota favored by 5. Now this game was 4.5 early in the week. Those are all gone. What do you think about that line move?
That was really surprising. I actually expected of the favorites to kind of come back to earth. I was expecting the public to really line up and get involved with the Saints here and move this thing into the 2.5 range. So for it to go in the other direction really surprised me. I like the Vikings. I was hopeful in expecting to see a 2.5. Yeah, that was not my expectation. Were you expecting it to go that high?
No, I really wasn't. And this is something I talk about in the next segment with Brent, the risk manager from DSI, is that, you know, the expectation is for public action to come in on New Orleans, as you mentioned. With the sharp action early in the week, yeah, you want to respond. You may go from 3.5 to 4, maybe 4 minus 15 on the favorite, to go all the way up to 5, and I know we're talking about dead numbers here with 4.5 and 5 that don't really matter from a favorite standpoint, but just to see this number go up without much resistance, knowing public money is coming in the other way, it's a pretty interesting position from the market as a whole.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I haven't heard, you know, you try to, as a handicapper, you stick to your own systems and your own models and things like that, but you have to keep your ear to the ground to kind of get a sense of what the public narrative is on any given game. And I haven't really gotten the feeling that Case Keenum, first time starter versus Drew Brees and Sean Payton, who have now played, you know, 11 or 12 playoff games together. I think this is Drew Brees' 13th playoff start, but is 12th with Sean Payton as the head coach in New Orleans. And, you know, this is the disparity between experience here, I thought would have been the drum that you would hear being, you know, beaten across the mainstream sort of pipelines all week. And people would just be lining up to back New Orleans and you would start to see this thing drift back. So, you know, there's obviously something going on here with, kind of who's in the betting market at this point, and it being the last game of the weekend, it's probably likely that like people have kind of made up their minds that they're going to bet New Orleans. They're just going to wait to do it until all of their other bets have cashed for all the other games and then place that New Orleans bet. So I think I'm probably going to wait until the very, very last minute here and hope to see the best number possible on Minnesota and get involved. I think the Minnesota defense here is the difference maker in this game. The the Minnesota defense, you know, they are really not getting the credit they deserve for being one of the better defenses we've seen over the last several years. And their ability to stop teams on third down is just truly remarkable. The percentages they're putting up on their third down stops don't look like the right category of stats, or like they look like somebody made a gross error, but if they're something like 25% of third downs are being converted against this defense, is just unbelievable. And they've only allowed like 8 touchdowns at home over the 8 games they've played. And of those 8 touchdowns, 3 of them were total garbage time touchdowns as the time was expiring. So really you're talking about a team that's only conceded 5 touchdowns at home all season. And against some pretty tough competition. So this is, this is a defense that I think can, you know, give New Orleans their toughest test of the year. Drew Brees was spectacular last week against Carolina, but it was a scheme and a team he's familiar with and has had success with twice already this season. I don't know that he's going to have a particularly nice day on Sunday, and that leads me to backing the Vikings and the under. Case Keenum is a wild card here. He's a very, very significant question mark. Are you in the camp of Case Keenum is a legit quarterback?
I think with the way that this scheme is structured with Pat Shurmur and all the short throws and getting guys out in space, and you know, it's a lot of high percentage offense, and I really like that, and I think he can have success with it. But as far as being like a regular quarterback in a more, you know, traditional scheme, probably not.
Yeah. Should he be a quarterback that could win a Super Bowl at home?
Yeah, right? It's crazy. And, you know, I think one of the big things
you
touched on with this, and, you know, I think a guy that doesn't get enough credit, and it's unfathomable to me that he doesn't, Mike Zimmer. Man, this dude is legit.
Yeah.
He puts together phenomenal defensive game plans. He was never the problem in Cincinnati. You know, I mean, he's not the reason why they didn't win a playoff game while Marvin Lewis was there. And I mean, who knows, maybe they will before Marvin Lewis is gone. But, you know, Zimmer is a guy that he just stands out in every facet. He's hired great assistants, great position coaches. You know, this is a guy that just gets it. And when you look at, you know, the importance of these playoff games, you look at playing teams that are comparable, you know, or in some cases better than you, you know, that coaching is something that can make up the gap. And, you know, I don't think New Orleans is better than Minnesota by any means, but I think that, you know, that the Zimmer angle does give them an edge here.
It does, yeah. He is a great coach. He's a great motivator too. You can tell, and you know, I was surprised that Pat Shurmur didn't get more serious looks as a head coach. I think he's done an amazing job coordinating this offense. If you can take your second string, really your third string quarterback in Case Keenum and turn him into, you know, a guy that is as efficient as Case Keenum has been this year, you know, you deserve a shot to coach your own team, in my opinion. And maybe he'll get hired, but it doesn't necessarily look like it. I'm going to be watching very carefully of kind of the mentality of Keenum in the first half and seeing how nervous he looks, if he's missing kind of the intermediate distance throws, like the 11 to 15 yard throws, if he's not as accurate as he needs to be on those throws, I'm going to be a little bit nervous holding the Vikings ticket, I guess. You know, they have enough weapons in the ground game to keep their third downs short. They have outstanding receivers in Diggs and Thielen that are catching every ball that's in the catch radius. Kyle Rudolph comes back and he's an outstanding red zone target. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, first touchdown score or whatever. I'm bullish on the Vikings overall. I think we see a Vikings, and I'm pulling for a good kind of old school defensive NFC title matchup between the Vikings and the Falcons next week. I think we get there by way of a comfortable Vikings win on the backs of an outstanding defensive performance on Sunday.
All right, let's transition over to the NBA for a few minutes here. And, you know, the first time we had you on, we talked a little bit about your model, some of the things that go into it. And of course you do produce your own numbers and then play accordingly based off of that. And We got a pretty good sized card here on Friday. We're not going to talk about the there are a couple of games featuring some teams with some back to backs. We're not going to look at Cleveland and Indiana because obviously we don't know what happens in tonight's game against Toronto. But we do have some intriguing matchups that, you know, don't have any back to back types of angles. We also have a lot of overnight lines posted for these games as well. So, Whale, let's go ahead and start with game 8-13, 8-14 here. Golden State takes on Milwaukee. The Warriors favored by 4.5 or 5 on the overnights. And you and I were talking about this game a little bit on Twitter here. And, you know, it certainly seems like the prognosis for Friday night for Steph Curry doesn't look real good. And that's built into the line.
Yeah, we're going to see, we're likely going to see Durant and Klay Thompson back. Durant was obviously on his minutes limit last night when they got beat by the Clippers. Thompson was getting his scheduled day of rest. So with those two getting full complement of minutes, I think you have to acknowledge that the Warriors should be favored here. You know, 4.5, this might be one of the shorter lines we ever see the Warriors at close to full strength this season. They have traditionally had a very tough time playing in Milwaukee for whatever reason. You go back the last couple of years. 2 years ago, they had a I think 2 years ago they lost in Milwaukee, and last year they won by like 3 points or something like that. I think Giannis is a nightmare matchup for them when he's offensively against their defense. Kevin Durant at full strength and at full health can probably limit him down the stretch. But I see this kind of playing out as a particular, you know, pretty tight game, back and forth throughout the first three quarters. And then if the Bucks can keep it close down the stretch and they put it in the hands of Giannis, I like their chances to come away with the win here. I think the total at 222 looks about right as well. But if I'm getting involved in this game tomorrow, it's likely going to be backing the Bucks to win.
Now, I know that you've got your model, and you obviously incorporated a lot of different things into that. This spot for Golden State is particularly interesting. Not only do you probably not have Steph Curry in this game, and you know that was something that certainly affected them getting hurt right before that game against the Clippers, to where they expected to have him. All of a sudden, they didn't. They already had Durant on a minutes restriction, as you mentioned. Klay Thompson with the day off. You know, it was kind of a perfect storm of bad things happening for Golden State prior to that game. So they play this game tonight on Friday. Saturday, they're in Toronto to take on the Raptors, who, of course, are taking on the Cavaliers on Thursday night. So a couple of good measuring stick games there for the Raptors. Then on Monday, they're in Cleveland to take on the Cavaliers. So this is a really unique spot, too, in that you've got a team that, as you mentioned, you know, has had some problems in Milwaukee and then plays a couple of high-profile opponents right after.
Points. Great points. This is not a good situation at all for Golden State, on top of the fact that they don't particularly play well against this team or in this location. This is the first of a 5-game road trip, I believe. And there are some angles to be considering when you're the first game on the road. So, you know, you're a little bit out of your normal schedule. You're a little bit out of your normal routine. They've pretty much had a fairly lax scheduling over the holidays. So this is kind of into the grind of the season for them. These next three games are going to tell us a lot about the team. And, you know, I thought you made a pretty great point when we were talking about this earlier. How good is a Steph-less Warriors team? You know, if they had to play the whole rest of the regular season, are you feeling in any way, shape, or form confident that they would get the one seed in the West?
I mean, it depends on how quickly James Harden gets back, I guess. But that is one of the amazing things, that you watch this team without Kevin Durant, and obviously they built up their core without Kevin Durant. He kind of came in and was supposedly, you know, that piece to put them over the top. They don't look like they miss Kevin Durant a ton when he's not out there, but when Steph Curry's not out there, they just look all out of sorts. And I don't know if it's because, you know, he facilitates the offense so much and he's such a phenomenal shooter from the outside, but they don't look the same without Curry. And it kind of makes me wonder here. You know, you have some situations in the league where teams want to make a statement. You know, we'll have these spots where the Cavs just feel like going out there and beating the hell out of somebody, and they do it, you know, just to remind everybody, hey, we're the Cavaliers. You have other spots where you get a team like Philadelphia that wants to say, hey, you know, we're on the cusp. We're looking to take that next step. We're going to step up and play really well here against somebody. For example, they did it in the first, you know, quarter and a half against Boston in London and then totally fall apart from that point on. For Golden State, you know, I mean, they've been this team that has wanted to make statement after statement in the regular season, and they did it last year, you know, with the 73 wins. They won the title. This year, you know, do they have that same regular season killer instinct to where, you know, maybe Steph Curry doesn't play at all in these three games and they don't care about it?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Steve Kerr, I'm thinking seriously about that for a couple reasons. I think without Steph Curry, your title hopes go from like 50% to like less than 25%. Probably if he's out for the rest of the season for some reason. And, you know, a lot of that, as you mentioned, he's the facilitator on offense. But even more so, this isn't a particularly deep team. So you take away his impact and you put a replacement level player in there. Well, their replacement level players aren't particularly good. And so, you know, you got a guy like, last night it was dreadful. You got a guy like Swaggy P, you know, starting out the game shooting threes, and you're like, oh, well, good luck if you had a Warriors ticket tonight. That's, you know, throw it in the trash. If I'm Steve Kerr, I'm probably recognizing how important it is to keep Steph Curry healthy. He's injured his ankle twice now. There was a ankle injury where he missed a handful of games in December. He tweaked his knee and had to come out of a game not too long ago, and then he hurt his ankle again in practice. No one really knows how severe it is. But with Steph Curry and ankle injuries, I don't think you really have the luxury of being aggressive. And the more time you can give him to rest here in the regular season, I think the better your shots are at the playoffs. And so I'm fully on board with, see what you got with your – you know, kind of your role players on this team through this road trip. And if you end up going 2-3 out of these five road games, then so be it. Houston, if you're Golden State, I think you do want the one seed, because I don't think you want to end up with San Antonio in round two and then Houston in the conference finals. I think you want to make sure that Houston and San Antonio are on a collision course for round two so that you can get the same kind of benefit of not having to shoot off fire all your bullets until the Western Conference Championships. Maybe you are keeping one eye on the standings, but I think much more important to keep to have a healthy Steph Curry in April than it is to win these games on the road in January against the Eastern Conference.
All right, how about this game here? Now, there isn't a market-wide overnight line for this one. BetOnline does have a number out as we're recording on Thursday evening. It's Minnesota -9 for game 809, 810 with the Knicks and the Timberwolves. And this one's really interesting to me because I do a lot of situational handicapping when it comes to the NBA because I don't know a ton about the personnel. It's just not a league that I follow all that closely. But I feel like I can get edges, you know, using the schedule to my advantage. For Minnesota here, blowout win over Cleveland, blowout win over Oklahoma City in a division game. Now you play the New York Knicks. I mean, how invested are they to play this game?
That's a great question. Anytime you flip conferences after, you know, or anytime you're coming off of a couple of wins against high-profile opponents, you mentioned, you know, they looked like world beaters against it. I would even go so far as go back one even more. They thumped the Pelicans as well. This team is rolling. If I'm Tom, you know, Tom Thibodeau has to be hearing the criticism that he's getting from the local media and from the national media about how he's, you know, how his usage rates on some of these players. And I think if you have these kind of three confidence building wins in a row, and now you're hosting the Knicks, I would expect you probably use this as an opportunity to, maybe give your guys a blow. We've seen Jeff Teague has been a pretty important kind of crunch time ball handler for the Timberwolves, in my opinion. And he's day to day, so if he's out, I'm probably going to get involved in the Knicks here. If it's I guess I would expect them to open this line something like Timberwolves -5 or so. Maybe -7.5. We're in that part of the season where, you know, when the better team is winning handily at home, they tend to cover 7.5 pretty easily. So I'd expect to see a line in that range. But then the game I would expect to play out much more closely. We'll probably be getting involved with the Knicks if we do see a line that's in that range.
Well, and for Minnesota too, then you go to Sunday night, you take on Portland in another division matchup there in that one with the game on ESPN. So you're right back in the spotlight against a team that you're going to be invested in playing. You know, this is maybe one of those spots where, as you mentioned, you know, it's probably in Tom Thibodeau's best interest to, you know, take the foot off the gas a little bit, give the guys a little bit of a break. And then, you know, maybe the back door's open for New York as well if Minnesota gets up big early. This kind of profiles to me as one of those games where Minnesota's up, you know, 16 or 18 going into the fourth quarter, and they just score like 16 or 18 points and then, you know, go ahead and lose in ugly fashion for everybody that laid the price. So, you know, we'll see how that one plays out. But I know there were a couple of other games that you wanted to talk about here that, you know, again, don't have any scheduling implications from Thursday night. One of them being game 803-804, Utah taking on Charlotte on the overnight here. Charlotte favored by 4 points. And, you know, when you look at a team that's 15-24, really hasn't played well this season, being a favorite of 4 points against the Utah team that, you know, has some upside, has some personnel. It's always of interest to me looking at these numbers in the NBA.
It is. It's really interesting. And I mean, Utah is probably the toughest team to handicap, I'm going to say. And it's a lot of it is to do with I think their coach, Quinn Snyder, is among the more experimental guys. So you're not necessarily able to have a solid vision of what he's going to come out with from night to night. Like the last game, I was blown away yesterday. They were at Washington, and he figured out a way to, you know, get Ricky Rubio open looks from three, and was getting, you know, he was getting 3-point shots from Ricky Rubio, and they were falling. And that's, you know, that tiny little wrinkle was enough to get them a win against the Wizards. They ended up winning 107-104. You know, and so they're a really tough team to handicap. Hornets are probably the most frustrating team to handicap because they have a really talented core. They have ability to score multiple ways. They have perimeter shooting. They have inside, you know, they have the big men inside to offensive rebound and to protect the rim. But for whatever reason, they just can't win games. 15-24 is a pathetic record for a team that's as talented as the Hornets are. And so I've had him in the back of my mind since before Christmas, like, look out for opportunities to back these guys at short prices because they're going to figure it out eventually. I know they've lost their coaches on extended leave with I can't remember what happened to him. I think he maybe had cancer, but their coach is out for a while, and maybe that is one of the factors that's kind of preventing them from really, you know, putting together a run here. This is probably a good time to get involved in the Hornets. You know, short favorites at home in January in the NBA traditionally come home for you. So I will be giving this some serious consideration at -4.
I know one game that we were looking at early on in the week when you and I were kind of comparing notes and looking at an outline is Portland and New Orleans, but unfortunately no look-ahead line for that one. So maybe I'll put you on the spot a little bit with this game, but I do want to get your thoughts on game 8-15, 8-16, Memphis versus Denver, and we'll wrap up the show with this one. You know, this is an interesting handicap to me because you've got a Denver team that's dropped three straight, just got blown out at home by Atlanta. Now, to be fair, they were coming off of a game against Golden State, really not the easiest of spots, and this is a team that has had a lot of injury problems throughout the year. But Memphis, 13-27, kind of all over the map with how they've played. Some games have been track meets. Some games have been close. Some games have been blowouts. Kind of, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get from Memphis on a given day. you know, one of the things that I like to look at in the NBA is I sort of look at these get right types of spots where teams can go out there. And if they play to their, you know, capabilities, they can kind of name the score against an inferior team. I want to feel like this is one for Denver, but when you look at a team that just lost at home by 13 to the Atlanta Hawks, it's a hard sell.
Yeah, it's 9-point favorites, right? They were 9-point chalks in that game, and 9-point chalk in that game, and they got run out of the gym. That was shocking, honestly. I like Denver overall as a team. I'm pulling for them to kind of make it into the lower tier of the playoffs. I'd love for them to get the 7th seed and get matched up with the Rockets. That would be a super fun series. And you know, they have a lot of weapons that they can, you know, on a given night, if their shots are falling, they're a really dangerous team. I think the Grizzlies, you mentioned, have kind of put it together lately. They played tough against the Wiz, kept that game within two. They played a great game against the Pelicans, coming away with that 105-102 win. And you know, they're as healthy as they've been in a while this season. That said, all is not right in Memphis. If you follow kind of their beat reporters and some of the guys who are really close to the team on the media side, there's a weird internal struggle going on right now. Do they tank? Don't they tank? Are they, you know, do the players themselves think they can win, want to win? Or are they all rowing in the same direction? You know, it's almost like they decided at one point in the season, like, okay, we're going to tank. And then they forgot and won a couple games they shouldn't have. And it's like, okay, well, you know, what is the identity of this team? They're 13-27. They're at the, you know, at or close to the bottom of the Western Conference, with not a whole lot of hope of getting into the playoff picture. So on the road in Denver at altitude is a tough place to play. They've been home now. You know, they had a little road spell right around New Year's, but they've had their last two games at home where they were pretty competitive, and they always are kind of pretty competitive in at home. Memphis is the kind of team that I really only ever back at home. And here on the road, the 7.5 does seem like it's a deflated price based on the result of that that Denver-Atlanta game. So I do think, you know, there's some line value here with the Nuggets at -7.5.
Well, Whale Capper, good to get you back on the program here. And one thing I do like to do, you know, when there's work I find out there that I really appreciate and think can have a lot of value for our listeners, even if it's from a competing site or competing people in the industry here, you know, there's enough of a pie to go around. And, you know, you do a great job with the Deep Dive podcast that you do. So tell our listeners a little bit about what goes on that show.
Oh, the Deep Dive is a passion project. I have a friend, Andy, who is a great co-host, and we decided to do kind of a specific NFL gambling-focused podcast that we started back in August, and we've been doing a couple episodes a week. We'll do like a Monday recap, what we thought of the games and what the look-aheads were on Monday, and then we'll do the true deep dive and try to bring on a guest on the Wednesday pod where we kind of go through every game and really get into the nitty gritty and the details. This is not, you know, a podcast for the casual fan by any stretch of the imagination. And we got a little long on a couple of them. We were like 2 hour long podcasts, but that's okay. Cause it was, you know, it, if nothing else, it's helping us kind of do a better job of working out what's going on in any given NFL week. With the NFL season winding down, we're going to pivot into some of the other awesome gambling content out there. Andy and I both, we every day, different sports. I obviously cover tennis and NBA in addition to NFL. So we're going to keep it going once the NFL season's over and have some fun content for some of the other sports throughout the year. So if you're a degenerate like myself, it's definitely worth subscribing and giving us a listen a couple times a week.
Well, and of course, you can follow Whale on Twitter @Whale_Capper. Man, thank you so much for your time. I know we ran a little bit long here, so I apologize for taking up so much of it, but hopefully we can get you on the show here again soon.
Oh, no, I'm sure it was my fault. I'm a little long-winded, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come on. Love talking to you about this stuff, and wish you the best of luck this divisional playoff weekend.
Really good to chat with Whale Capper there. I know we've had some positive feedback on the first segment that he did for us. Hopefully we get some positive feedback for that segment as well. very sharp guy, knows NFL, knows NBA, also knows the tennis markets really well. We do have the Australian Open coming up, so you want to make sure that you're following along with him for that event. One more guest left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is Brent, risk manager down in Costa Rica at BSI Sportsbook. He's following all the sharp betting action here for the NFL playoffs. So he gave us some insights on what the sharps have been playing, and we also talked about where the lines are going to move here for the divisional round game. So without further ado, here is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from BSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, a risk manager down at BSI Sportsbook in what I presume is sunny and beautiful Costa Rica. Brent, how's it going, man?
Well, you kind of like rubbing me the wrong way to start off there. We actually got rain today. There's a little bit of rain coming down right now. Now, it was like around, 27, 28 Celsius, so it's still nice and warm. But I had a little bit of rain yesterday and a little bit of rain today. And, like, honestly, for January, it's not unheard of, but it is kind of rare. So I'm not going to complain about a few drops of rain, though, based on where you are.
No, you shouldn't complain at all, to be completely honest with you. And, hey, it's a good day for you to be inside watching the NFL markets, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But before we do that, I want to wrap up the college football season here. How did Monday night go for you? Because it was a very interesting game. Georgia with a comfortable lead at halftime. Nick Saban makes that move to go with the backup quarterback. I'm not going to butcher the poor kid's name on here, but Tua did a fantastic job for them. How did you wind up as a sportsbook with that game?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned, Saban is who he is because he makes calls like that. And that was I'll say ballsy to go with a freshman like he did. It was weird though. Like as soon as they came out that second half, I just had a bad feeling that Alabama was just going to turn things around and they look good. This is even before they scored the touchdown. I said to one of the guys here, I said, I just got a bad feeling about Bama here. Our chart, pregame, we weren't too bad. I mean, we actually did need Georgia straight up. Now, it was not a huge decision, but we did need Georgia. The sharper money that we touched on the show prior was Georgia plus 4.5 being sharp. So I did kind of, you felt a little bit comfortable in terms of having Alabama money that the public had bet on, the sharp money that did come in Georgia. Now, again, it wasn't a huge decision, but we did definitely need Georgia. So that was good for us. But anytime when you've got a big game like this, kind of like a one-off, it was basically the only thing going on at that time. Everyone was sitting down watching that game, and you had the final score land three when the spread basically closed 3.5, and the total ended up being 49 when we ended up closing like 45.5 on the total as well. So it's not good for us in that teasers cashing both ways. I mean, no matter who you teased in that game, whether it was the over, the under, and regardless of what side you cashed, so that was not good for us. It wasn't in the end it wasn't a great game for us. It wasn't a good game for us. We did lose a little bit, but all told it wasn't too bad. And I think just when you look at a game that big, when someone, when people are going to sit down and watch the game and they haven't bet it yet, and they're kind of like, what to do? It seems to be by default. You look at things and you say, wow, why don't I tease both, this side and that total? And, we call teasers for a reason because, when you tease them either way on those sides, I mean, they'll, look pretty good. If you did just even like a 6-point teaser or a 6.5-point teaser, looking at Georgia, plus 9.5 or plus 10, I mean, that sounds pretty good. And you flip it the other way when you're talking Alabama, getting like 2.5 or 3, well, that kind of looks good as well. So when in doubt, big one-off games like that, people tease. So that's why it wasn't the best for us.
And that's always interesting, too, because, a lot of times the game will fall right on the number or right around the number, and you get all these people on twist nose. And, I mean, look, sometimes it's not a great thing when it falls right on the number or right around the number, depending on, what you need and also that whole teaser impact. But, I don't know if you have any of this information in front of you, but something I was kind of thinking about, for example, I had a Jalen Hurts over rushing yards prop, which looked pretty good at halftime. Then, of course, he doesn't come out for the second half, so that one didn't help me out any, but Hurts, just 3 completions, 21 passing yards, 6 carries for 47 yards. So he was under that. Didn't have a touchdown. Didn't really factor in the game too much. Jake Fromm didn't play all that well. 16 to 32, 232, touchdown and a couple picks. Sony Michel fell short of 100 yards, but Nick Chubb didn't really do anything. So do you have any idea how things finished up from a prop standpoint?
I mean, the thing is, we write so much volume on these things. We generally tend to do well. Now, I know there were a couple things that props that were sharp plays. Just off the top of my head, I know that Jake Fromm, they had his total completions We did have sharp money on that. It's funny because he actually ended up with 16 completions, and the sharp money came on the under 16, minus 120 is where they started. I think that number closed at minus 150, so we stayed on the 16, just moved the juice on that. It's kind of interesting that one closed right on the 16. And I know we also had sharp money on actually the running back props. We had a prop with Harris and Scarborough, their total rushing yards combined versus Michelle and Chubb. Sharp money was on Michelle and Chubb -10.5 in that prop. So we did take some interesting sharp action on the props, and we did quite well to them, just generally speaking. It's interesting when you talk about, you know, games landing on the number and people thinking, oh, you know, your Vegas knows and stuff like that. And just so, like, you just have to, you know, get back to the entire function of the line, and, as you know, why the line comes out and what its purpose is. The purpose of the line is never to predict the score of a game. The entire function of the line is to get as much money bet on team A as there is on team B. That's the design of the line, and that's the kind of its purpose. And, you know, you hear things like that about, they got it right in terms of the score. Well, no, you know, we didn't get it right. You look at our chart. If we balance our action, that's kind of the only gauge of whether we got a game right. Another thing that I find kind of amusing was when people talk about looking at games and calling like trap lines and stuff like that. It's like, there's no such thing as a trap line. I mean, it's like as if we know who's going to win a game. You know, we put a number out there, and if it moves one way or another, it's because of bettors who are moving that number. Not, you know, we're not the ones who are driving that. It's being driven by the money.
There's a really interesting sort of, it's kind of in the same context, point that I want to make with New Orleans and Minnesota. So when we get to the NFL side, we'll talk about that. The last thing I want to say here is, with regards to the national championship game, you're lucky you didn't put up a prop on if Roquan Smith was a badass or not, because all the money would have been on yes, and that dude was just absurd. He had a great game.
Yeah, no, he's something special, that's for sure, yeah.
All right, let's transition over to the NFL side here. Look at the four games in the divisional round. We're going to go in rotation order here. Not all of these games have sharp action, although three of them do, so that makes for some interesting commentary here on today's version of the Odds Report. But game 301-302, Atlanta takes on Philadelphia. As you've heard here throughout the week on Bang the Book Radio, first time that a number one seed has been a home underdog in its first playoff game. That is it, the Philadelphia Eagles, who are catching three varying juice across the marketplace. Brent, what's the story on this game over at your shop?
Yeah, this is like, just from a line side, it is probably like the most interesting I find, just because it is an odd spot in terms of having the home team getting three at home. You know, and Philadelphia, for you know, for what it's worth, their regular season record, you know, 13-3. You're not talking about Atlanta, who is 10-6, and it's like, you know, something's wrong here. But obviously, there's factors that go into this, namely the quarterback situation for Philadelphia. So that kind of does change things. And yeah, I mean, we've had pretty decent action on this one. My total's pretty much dead flat, as you see. There hasn't been a whole lot of movement from my end. I came in at 41.5, and I'm sitting at 41 right now. So, you know, it has dropped down, but it hasn't been sharp action that dropped the number down. I think it's more, the weather, as we talked about previously, does start to become a factor in these late games. It's going to be cold in Philadelphia, cold in New England, of course, and cold in Pittsburgh as well. But I do have sharp action that did come in the 43.5 on this one. Sorry, I opened up 43.5, and that's why we dropped down to where we are right now. So that could be, you know, could be weather driven, as well as, you know, sharp guys kind of getting the jump on things. And it's interesting though, like, you look at the total action that I've got, my wager count and stuff like that, it's pretty much dead even. So even though the report of the bad weather and stuff like that, I still have, you know, public money betting on the over in this game, which, you know, perhaps is a bit of a surprise, just because, like I said, the Atlanta's defense finally looked like they put things together quite well last week against the Rams. They held the Rams, basically shut the Rams down. So Atlanta, you know, they played probably their most complete game that you maybe have seen all season. So I've got Falcons right now -3. Now this line on the side, it did kind of open at 3, drop down to 2.5, maybe just for a heartbeat, and boom, we're back up to 3, dog 15 right now. I know there are some 3 minus 120s out there right now, but sharp action on this one is on the under 43.5.
Now, I think it's interesting that your wager count, well, actually, you were talking about your wager count for the total. What does the wager count look like on the spread for this game then?
Yeah, spread, I'm almost 2-1 favoring Atlanta. So I've got twice as many bets on Atlanta. And actually, my money is the same way. So I don't have any sharp action per se on the side, either side of this game. But so my wager count and my money are both 2-1 favoring the Falcons.
Well, and I think that's a pretty good spot for you to be in here, because based on the opinions I've gotten from the professional handicappers on this show, and from what I see out there in the marketplace, looks like this game winds up being a little bit of a sharp public split, with the public looking to back Atlanta, the sharp guys taking Philadelphia here in this one. So I think you're probably in pretty good shape to hold tight on that three and just move the juice around, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the number, this number kind of dropped down a little bit. Like I said, it already did earlier in the week. Now, when I see a market, you know, the entire market drop on a number, I can kind of gauge whether or not that sharp money, based on what books move their numbers and how much they move. When everyone goes back up, I think it's indicative of, you know, the same action that I have here in terms of twice as many bets the other way on Atlanta. So I think that initial drop down was sharp driven. Now, it didn't happen here, so I can't really comment for sure that it was sharp action that brought it down. So I am interested to watch this number, just because I do have my count one way, and I am three minus 05 on Atlanta right now, but I just get a sneaking suspicion this one might drop down.
Well, and of course, we are recording this on Thursday evening, so you're going to get an avalanche of money here with this being, you know, the first playoff game. Yeah, there's college basketball going on, but college football's done. So for those that really only bet football, you know, they're kind of going to go on that spending spree a little bit, that shopping spree here with these remaining NFL playoff games. Only 7 games left in the NFL season, because I don't count the Pro Bowl. So, you know, you're going to get a lot more action here over the next couple of days, and that should be interesting to see. Do you envision coming off the three then, or no?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if we ended up at 2.5, put it that way, and it would be sharp money that drove that. I don't see this number going anywhere higher than it is right now. We're the highest on the board at 3 minus 05, and again, that's because I have twice as many bets the other way, so that's why I'm kind of higher than other books. But the only thing I could see this number doing is going down to 2.5.
All right, let's go to the first AFC game of the weekend. Tennessee takes on New England. No particularly notable sharp action here in this one yet over at DSI, but again, you know, we've got more than 48 hours as we're recording on Thursday evening until this game actually kicks off, game 303, 304. New England is a significant favorite here of 13.5.
Yeah, it's obviously a real big number. I mean, Tennessee, you could argue between Tennessee and Buffalo, which of those two teams were perhaps the worst team in the playoffs. And, you know, even Tennessee off the win last week, I mean, it was a big win when you go into Kansas City down 21-3 at the half, and you end up winning 22-21. It's interesting that game, just looking back, like when Travis Kelce went out, it just kind of, just everything kind of stopped for Kansas City. The whole momentum of the game switched, and obviously Tennessee got a great effort from the running game as well. So, I mean, they look good in beating Kansas City, but I mean, it's kind of easy to poke holes through Kansas City, I think, the way the ebb and flow that they have during the season, now that you're going, you know, into New England, when you're talking about, you know, I think New England kind of gets, you know, this conception sometimes that they don't have, you know, one of the better defenses, but they got a great offense. But if you look at, you know, points allowed and stuff like that, I think New England's like, you know, probably top 5 in the league in terms of points allowed. I mean, they're, you know, they're a decent defense. They're one of those bend and don't break types, and they've been like that for a long time. They scored probably the second most points in the league, so they're right up with that. And I, you know, it's, so all those factors involved, me sitting at 13.5. I've got other books out there in the market that are 13. That kind of gives you, you know, an idea that I've got three times as many bets on New England, and my money is about 4 times as higher on New England. So they're sitting, you know, like I said, at home, probably, you know, perhaps facing the worst playoff team that's in there right now. Tennessee, I think, was 500 or below 500 on the road. So like 3-5, I think, on the road. It's probably going to be cold, which obviously New England is used to. You know, the Patriots are also getting healthy. I mean, Hogan is healthy. Burkhead's healthy. So they're going to have a lot of options out there. And it's just tough to go against New England in a game like this. Despite the cold weather, too, I mean, you see this number and the total has gone up from 47 to 48. I've got actually, 1.5 times many bets on the over. So not quite a 2-to-1 count on the over. So I've got New England money, big count, 3-to-1, and a count go towards the over, but 1.5 to, you know, times favoring the over. So New England and the over, kind of no surprise.
No, it's not. And when you look at what Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have done together, about 60% against the spread. And over the last 2 years, the Patriots, 27-8 against the number. They were 16-3 last year, 11-5 so far to date this year. I mean, Brent, you just have to be scratching your head at this point, wondering, like, what do I do to get to a point where I actually need New England in a game? I mean, how high can you keep putting their numbers? It almost doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it's rather annoying, Adam. No, there's games like all through the season pretty well. I mean, we're always a little bit higher on New England than whatever the market is. If you look out right now, I mean, there's some, you know, like a few books out there that are 13 right now. Some of them are even like 13 minus 05. And I'm sitting at 13.5, and I'm still bombarded one side with New England money.
Do you think that changes as we get closer to kickoff? I mean, do you feel like the Sharps are going to come in and tempt fate and go against the Patriots? Or do you think that, you know, going to 14 is more likely than this number coming down?
If I get my wish, they'll come in on Tennessee. Yeah. You know, I think because the number has gone from 13.5 down to 13 at most places, I think that's kind of the trend. But you know there's going to be so much public money the other way. I think it's pretty much going to solidify where it is at 13. It might bounce back and forth between 13.5 and 13. But, I mean, I think right now if I'm sitting at 13.5 and everyone else is 13, if they pump up to, you know, to 13.5, I might be tempted to go to 14 and just kind of play the game of being a half point higher.
All right, let's go to Sunday here. Game 305, 306 on the board for the right to probably face the New England Patriots unless something really crazy happens. Jacksonville takes on Pittsburgh. This has been an interesting line to watch throughout the week. Opened 7 at a handful of shops, went up to 7.5, sat 7.5 with extra juice. As of last night, there were quite a few books that were 7.5. Now most of the market down to 7.
Yeah, it's interesting with this one, too, in that there was, you know, the opening number was 7, and there was 7, like dog money out there. At that point, there was sharp money that did come on Pittsburgh, actually. Pittsburgh -6.5, -115 is where I got sharp money on that one. So this is, an interesting game to debate, that's for sure, just because, you know, this is one of those cases where these two teams have played each other already in the season. That was a case where, you know, Jacksonville went into Pittsburgh and beat them kind of, you know, quite handily, you know. But Pittsburgh, you know, they just at home, they just seem like such a strong team, you know, even though the fact that they did lose, you know, the previous meeting between those two, Antonio Brown is going to be healthy. And Jacksonville, I mean, you know, they don't get a whole lot of credit, but I mean, 10-6, they had a real good season. I think they had like the second fewest points allowed. They scored the fifth most points, you know, per game. So they've got a decent offense and a solid defense as well. But I mean, Pittsburgh, it's just tough to go against them. And I, you know, unfortunately for me, I've got sharp money, like I said, on Pittsburgh -6.5, -115, and I've got a wager count about 2-1 favoring Pittsburgh. So I've got twice as many bets favoring Pittsburgh, and my money is about 3-1 favoring Pittsburgh as well. I've just taken a look at the total. I've also got under money now. Again, that can be a combination of the fact that, I mean, Jacksonville's defense was pretty good for most of the season. I mean, it wasn't throughout the season, but, I mean, they gave up a whole lot of points. I think it was to San Francisco, you know, Seattle as well. That was kind of a higher scoring game. But, I mean, that offense looked good, and you know, their defense looked good for most of the season. So it is definitely an interesting game. You know, especially super cold weather in Pittsburgh as well, which, you know, I don't really know who it favors. Obviously, Roethlisberger's got a lot of experience in the bad weather, and they got a great running game as well. So, but I mean, Jacksonville's got a decent running game as well. So it's quite interesting how this one shapes up. This total did open at 41. That's where we are right now. And it opened, like I said, and there was number 7 on out there, and 7 with dog juice when they bought down at Pittsburgh. So the line basically hasn't moved at all, which is a good spot for us.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to clarify here. It's not that you had 6.5 on the board. It's that you had 7, what, -05, and then they just bought the half point.
Yes. Yeah, it's just a half point buy. And again, that's another thing we're talking about, you know, what people think about line movers and what line moves and sharps and stuff like that. Sometimes I hear people say that, oh, you know, sharp guys don't buy points. And I'm just like, whoever told you that? Like, I mean, where did you get that impression from? Because, I mean, we see guys do it all the time, and it obviously almost always happens off the key numbers. You're talking about 3 and 7. That's about it in terms of buys. I mean, you don't see sharp guys, you know, buying a half point on a total or something like that.
Well, and that's a really key distinction here. That's an important lesson for our listeners out there. Is I think a lot of people, you know, look at a 6.5 and they're like, oh, I want to buy to 7 just to be safe in case of a push. That's really not plus EV. What you want to do is buy off of a key number, not buy onto a key number. So I think that, you know, using this game as an example of that is, you know, a pretty good thing here at this stage of the game.
Yeah, it's funny, like when guys get down to doing, you know, their own handicap and really talk about it in terms of they've got an idea in terms of what their expected win percentage and expected value on a number and stuff like that, then you start getting into, you know, when is, you know, a good point to buy points or not. You know, the beauty of public bettors and most public bettors, of course, is whether a game has an expected value for them or not, they're generally going to play it.
All right, one more game on the board here for the divisional weekend. That is New Orleans taking on Minnesota. This one's up to 5, pretty much market-wide. Bovada 4 -125, so that's effectively 4.5 almost with them. So it seems like they're kind of expecting, which is no surprise, public money to come in on the Saints. But are you surprised to see this number go up from 3.5 to 5?
Yeah, I am. And again, it's tough because, as I said before, you kind of you know, been in the business long enough that you kind of get a feel at least for where you think the public money is going to go. And New Orleans is obviously the more, you know, the more flashy team, you know, Drew Brees and stuff like that, whereas Minnesota is more like a grinded out defense kind of game. I mean, who's their quarterback and stuff like that? It's like, it doesn't matter who their quarterback is. They just seem to be getting the wins and stuff like that. So, you know, Brees and New Orleans are definitely the more public team. So you could kind of predict that you were going to get money on New Orleans. There's, you know, there's no surprise there. And that is the way things have gone in terms of the wagered count. I've got a wagered count of almost, you know, 2-1, almost twice as many bets on New Orleans. But this number has gone from 3.5 up to 5 where we are right now. And that was because of sharp money that came in on Minnesota. So I do have, you know, this is the good spot where I, you know, I often refer to a sharp public split. And this is one of these games that sets up profile that way, in that I have public money on New Orleans. Like I said, a wagered count almost 2-1 favoring the Saints, and I have sharp money the other way on Minnesota. And because of, you know, all the money on New Orleans, my money's, you know, close on this, on the side. I actually have a little bit more money on Minnesota. Again, your sharp guys are generally betting max wagers, where your public guys are kind of chipping away with smaller bets. This total here is too kind of interesting that I've got, you know, it has gone up a little bit. We're sitting at 46 or 46.5. I think the opening number was like around 45, so this number has gone up. But in terms of the wager count, I'm pretty much dead even on the action I've taken in terms of the number of bets.
Now, we mentioned at the top of the segment here, you know, you said something about people believe that sportsbooks put up trap lines, and I don't think that's the case either. But there is something interesting in play here about this game, which is exactly what you just talked about. You expect New Orleans public money, and I mean, that's just going to be the nature of the beast, and you've got a team that scores a lot of points with Drew Brees. And also, I know there's the home road splits for New Orleans, but this game will be played inside. So, you know, it's really not that different of an environment for Drew Brees. But what stands out to me here about this game, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm off base here, with this number going up from 3.5 to 5, knowing you're getting public action in New Orleans, it feels like the sports books, and you included perhaps, are taking a position on Minnesota that you think that they're the right side, because you're almost not influenced by the public money that's coming.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, right now my money is, you know, like I said, it still slightly favors Minnesota, even though I've got, you know, a higher wager count favoring New Orleans. And I definitely expect by kickoff that it's going to continue that way. I'm going to have at least twice as many bets on the Saints, and my money might, you know, hopefully. You know, I say hopefully I'll have more money on New Orleans, because, again, if you get a chance to position yourself on the same side as the sharps, you generally do that. And you talk about the home road splits. Yeah, I mean, New Orleans was only 4-4 on the road, but you're right. This is one of those games that's played inside this weekend. But, I mean, Minnesota at home, they were 7-1, so they had, you know, fewest points per game allowed. And, you know, there's a lot of things to like about Minnesota now. I, you know, I'm no handicapper per se, so I'm not out here picking games. But you, when you look at things, you know, it's kind of like the confirmation bias. You can convince me pretty easily of a lot of reasons why Minnesota might be the right side.
And that's really important for me to drive home for our listeners. And I talk about looking for context clues in the market. And like I said, it looks like the market, the sports book specifically, are taking this Minnesota position, because they do know, you know, you're going to get public money, New Orleans plus 5, maybe New Orleans plus 4.5. But, you know, you still move more aggressively early in the week on that Minnesota money, because, you know, it's a position probably worth taking here in this instance. And it's kind of in contrast to the first game, where I guess maybe it's not in contrast, maybe it's along the same lines, where you know you're getting Pittsburgh public money in that game. You just know it's going to happen. But coming off of the 7.5, coming down to 7, having some books out there at 7 flat, you know, again, you're not as worried about that Pittsburgh public money, because you know it's coming and you've already budgeted for that in the way that you've approached the game.
Yeah, honestly, with this Pittsburgh game, I'm trying to be, you know, higher than most on you know, out in the market now. There are, you know, a lot of sevens out there, 7 flat and stuff like that. I'm 7-15 right now. If I'm, you know, if I was 7-120, which I might be in, you know, in a day or two, I'll still get Pittsburgh money that way. Matter of fact, if I was, you know, 7.5, I'd probably still be getting Pittsburgh money, and I just get, you know, maybe guys buying the point down to 7 and laying the juice on it.
Well, Brent, I think it's so interesting here, and especially nice that we can go in-depth a little bit more with these playoff games. Obviously, just 2 next week, and then the following week we'll talk about the Super Bowl line and then do some prop stuff as well with some of the sharper props that are out there. But, Brent, things are winding down, and I guess a final question to ask you here on today's show. Are you happy to see football go, or is it something where, you know, you miss it, you miss the action, because it is the primary cash cow for this industry?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I do enjoy football, like as a spectator, as a fan. I do like watching football, that's for sure. But in terms of, you know, it's all about, you know, how much work we do down here for every single game versus the reward for it. It's kind of a, you know, a risk versus reward, but work versus reward kind of scenario. And, you know, you take a, you know, I'm going to throw out the nasty college basketball example. I mean, you take a college basketball game versus a college football game on a Saturday, and you basically have to do the same amount of work, the line movement and stuff like that for each of those games. It just, the amount of volume that you have on each of them is so much, you know, so much less. So in terms of your reward, in terms of how much, how the well the book does, is a lot less as well. So, I mean, we're going to savor these football games for sure in the playoffs. And the thing, you know, I really enjoy about these playoffs is obviously the way they're structured in terms of one game before the other and stuff like that. So everyone's going to bet a whole bucket full on that first game on Saturday. They're going to bet a whole bucket full on the late game on Saturday night and do the same thing again on Sunday. So it makes for, you know, it makes for really interesting games for us in terms of, you know, just magnifies in terms of your risk management in terms of what you've got to do. Like this Pittsburgh-Jacksonville game, it's going to be interesting, you know, for us here in terms of evaluating what we do and what's out there in the market. If this number happens to drop the other way in terms of sharp action coming in somewhere on Jacksonville, that'll probably be, you know, that would be good news for me because I can hang on to my 7 or 7 minus 115 if other books, you know, are dropping to, you know, Pittsburgh minus 7 dog 15 or 7 dog 20 and stuff like that. So it's everything kind of gets magnified here. You know, you get games that are runaway games like the Tennessee New England game right now where I'm sitting at 13.5 when everyone's at 13. But it's kind of, you know, it's kind of the fun of being in this industry is the cat and mouse game.
Well, Brent, enjoy this weekend, man. Have fun with it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me on, Adam. Appreciate it.
Well, there you go. There was this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Lots of considerations there, as you heard, and it's very, very interesting to get that perspective from the other side of the counter. So we're very fortunate to get that every Friday here during the football season. Coming up on our Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, our NFL Week in Review and Conference Championship Weekend Preview with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. And then we'll handicap the hardwood with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. We'll also get his thoughts on how the college football season wrapped up, talk with him about those same questions that I posed to people like Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds and Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels this week. We'll hear his final wrap-up thoughts with that, but then predominantly focus on college basketball, as that is really the big game in town now for him and also for a lot of other handicappers that are out there, just because, you know, the sheer number of games in college basketball does lead to less efficiency in the betting market than you'll see in the NBA and the NHL. So, you know, we'll talk a lot of college basketball here as we go forward on Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. A happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.